Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 336 for September 26th, 2011. Once again, I'm on location at Whiskey Live Paris. Support for Whiskey Cask comes from Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. And additional support for our special coverage of Whiskey Live Paris comes from La Maison du Whiskey. I'll have more highlights from Whiskey Live Paris in a few minutes, along with the calendar of events and the comments of the week. But first, let's look at some more of the week's news, brought to you as always by Glenmorangie. First off, we broke some news this weekend during the September episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings. A couple of months ago, I reported that Japan's Nikko Whiskey had signed a deal to export its whiskeys to the U.S. for the first time. More details on that deal came out this weekend. La Maison du Whiskey handles Nika's European export business and will be leading its entry into the U.S. market as well. LMDW's Didier Gorbanzada told us that the U.S. label approval process is underway now for the first two Nika exports, which will be the Yoichi 15-year-old single malt and the Takatsuru 12-year-old blended malt, with hopes of starting sales on the East Coast in early 2012. The Yoichi 15-year-old was one of the whiskeys our tasting panel looked at this month. Also, Kilhoman's John McClellan told us the first age statement Kilhoman single malt is about a month away, with the debut of the Kilhoman 5-year-old. This is expected to mean the end of the quarterly releases from Kilhoman, but there will also be a sherry cask finished expression coming soon. By the way, Kilhoman has signed on as the presenting sponsor for Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings, and I'd like to welcome them on board too. You can find out more about both stories in this month's episode of Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings. It's available at the Whiskey Cast website and in the iTunes Music Store. In other news, Bonhams plans its next whiskey auction on October 12th in Edinburgh, and there's a really rare Glenlivet scheduled to go on the block. It was distilled back in 1883 and bottled in 1931. Bonhams expects it to sell for around £20,000 or about $31,000. Fortune Brands is scheduled to make the official changeover to Beam Inc. next week, and while company officials maintain their plans to remain independent, the sharks are already circling. Dr. Vijay Malia of United Spirits told JustDrinks.com the other day that he's interested in teaming up with another buyer to make a play for Beam at some point in the future. The likely suspects are Diageo and Pernod Ricard, but Pernod has already said it's focusing on paying down debt these days, and Diageo has also been trying to dampen expectations that it would be a bidder for Beam as well. In whiskey news from here in Paris, John Glazer's Great King Street blend received excellent reviews from our Whiskey Cast Virtual Tastings panel, but Compass Box is not resting on its laurels.
I'm really happy with the way it's been received so far all around the world. We try to make here blended Scotch whiskey for people who love great whiskeys, for people like the people in this room today here at Paris Whiskey Live. And so far we're getting great response.
It's just now becoming available in the U.S. and other markets outside of Europe as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're launching in September in the U.S. We've been in France and a few other markets in Europe since June, but it's now going all over the world in all the countries where we sell.
On another front, you've made some tweaks to the Peat Munster as well, right?
We have, yeah, over the last several years. I've been doing something for the last 4 or 5 years, been slowly increasing the peatiness of Peat Munster gradually. And we've also had to evolve the recipe over the last 3 years to swap out one of the whiskeys for which availability was limited. And we've evolved it in a way that I really like, and it gets great feedback. All the information's on our website, rather than going in the names of distilleries right now. And it's all on our website.
Basically, it involves a switch in aisle of distilleries, and people can figure it out real easily from there.
Exactly, yeah. As I say, it's all there on the website. But, this is part of what blending is all about. When these things happen, you evolve, and you do it gradually if you can. And for me, there are two reasons why. I mean, a lot of companies talk about their blends are always the same, and there's really that's not always the truth, because we're dealing with natural products. You know, whiskeys and casks, all casks are different. There are going to be variations batch to batch, no matter what. And there are two reasons people will switch things. One is because they have to, because, for example, in Peat Munster, one of the whiskeys no longer being available. We evolve that over time. The second reason people will evolve recipes is a really good one, more important. because they want to. And sometimes we do that. We've done it with Peat Monster. We've done it with a couple other whiskeys over the years. Because if you can think, if you figure out a way to make something better, you ought to do it.
What's the next project?
Working on something for November 22nd. That's probably all I'll really say about it. But
a day that will live in infamy.
A day that in many people's minds will probably live in infamy. That's right. And we're going to have a special limited release that'll be released on that day in November.
Explain why this is a day that will live in infamy, and at least what you can tell us about this.
Well, as a lot of people who follow Scotch whiskey will know, the laws around labeling of Scotch whiskey and some other aspects of Scotch whiskey production and marketing are changing due to new legislation that went past Parliament in the UK several years ago. The grandfather clause for some of these things expires on November 22nd, so there are some things in terms of labeling that you can no longer do after that date. And we want to sort of commemorate the date where, for example, well, I'll just tell you that we'll no longer be able to label a whiskey vatted malt or refer to it as a vatted malt or a pure malt. And those are terms that have been around for over 100 years. We just want to send them off in style, pay homage to them.
What are you going to call it?
That we'll wait on. Let you know, November 22nd, it's right around the corner.
John has admitted that his November 22nd whiskey will be known as, quote, the last vatted malt. Meanwhile, Glen Grand introduced a limited edition 25-year-old single malt today in Paris. Distillery manager Dennis Malcolm says just 800 bottles will be available in France and some Asian markets.
Why France? Because our new distributor, Rothschild, is making such a good job for us. We thought, let's reward them in some little way. So we did that. I selected five sherry casks, and I blended them all together, all 25-year-old. Rather reminiscent of Glen Grant days 20, 30 years ago when it was all sherry and not bourbon, so it was nice to do it.
What else are you working on for the rest of us?
Well, I'm not supposed to tell you all my stories, but we have something coming out next year, we're hoping, because I'm 50 years past in the industry, so we're hoping to do a 5 decades, select from each decade, and that might be spring to summertime. But if you remember, I have a little cask up in the cave in the garden.
Right.
That cask was 47 years in a warehouse for maturing. And the last 3 years, it's been maturing in the cave, in the garden, in the open air. So we're hoping to have maybe 40, 50 bottles there. So that'd be something different to do.
The Angels didn't get all that, though, did they?
No. I'm part of an Angel. You have to help the Angels from time to time, so you go and just check out to see that they're not taking too much. But we're hoping to have about 50, 60 bottles in the cask left.
And not to be outdone, Chivas Brothers is releasing a new Aberlour for the French market, where it's the top-selling single malt, and Miller gave me the details.
Yeah, well, what we have in France is two parallel ranges. In the supermarkets, we sell the 10-year-old, the 10-year-old sherry cask finish, the 12 and the 16. But for the wine and spirit merchants, for prestigious bars, for a restricted number of very special clients, we have a completely separate range, which they cannot be bought in the supermarkets. So it gives them a point of difference. And that range now begins with the 12-year-old non-chill filtered. So we've got a special version of 12 years old, and we bottled it at 48%. So you can really taste the benefit of not chill filtering. And when you taste it, Mark, I think you'll be overwhelmed by the wonderful tastes of honey, vanilla, and the beautifully creamy, rich, smooth mouth-coating texture that it's got. It slips down like silk, really. It's just fantastic. But then you've got all the wonderfully fresh fruit, dried fruit, fantastic development of mild toffee flavors, a little bit of milk chocolate coming through, and a fantastically long finish. So it's a great product, and it's been super to be here and to be involved in launching it.
Now, why non-chill filter this one when the other products are chill in the line are chill filtered?
Well, this one is being sold in the caviste shops, the wine and spirit merchants, and or in very good bars. So the person selling it is in a position to explain to the customer what the points of difference are, why it is that it's so special, and obviously also the people who are going to these sort of places to buy a bottle of whiskey or to have a glass of whiskey are much more knowledgeable about whiskey in the first place. And so it's giving the connoisseur something which is different, and it's also selling it through a channel where the people concerned are already very knowledgeable about whiskey, and so they can do it justice. And then that leads on to the 15-year-old Select Reserve, the Cuvée Marie d'Écosse, which we've had before, but we've repacked it in a lovely canister, so it's more in keeping with the rest of the range. And then from that on to the delicious gold medal winning 18-year-old, which I was thrilled to bits to be able to launch here in France a few years back. And then we've still got a Buna to finish off the range, 100% sherry cask, non-chill filtered, entirely natural cask strength, so currently run about 59-60% alcohol by volume.
This reminds me to a certain extent of a Buna, with the stronger fruitiness and the more vibrant nature.
Yeah, I think so. Just have a little sniff. There's a big delivery of flavour. That's right, and the higher strength really helps that. So you can, at 48%, you can drink it neat, or you can add a little touch of water, but not very much, and just let it slip down a treat.
What is the rest of the world getting these days from Aberlour?
Oh, they're getting plenty of 10, 12, 16, and 18, and a Buna are available. It's just that in France, where we're the number one single malt in the whole country, we want to maintain our leadership position, and we have the opportunity to look at delivering different ranges through the specialist retailers who are a very strong part of the market here in France. So it's a slightly different situation here. But generally, whatever we launch here in France gets out to the rest of the world in a year or two, so just wait for it. It's on its way, I'm sure.
Another one of these watch this space things, right?
Yeah, just keep watching it. Watch it. You may well find that you can buy it through Aberlour Distillery shop. If you turn up at the shop, and it's probably available through on mail order in the UK, or at least if it isn't yet, it will be before too long.
Meanwhile, the Glenlivet is about to release its latest Cellar Collection edition, and while Ian Logan wasn't pouring it here in Paris, he was willing to talk about it.
The new Cellar Collection we have, which will be the 10th edition, will be out late November. It's a 1980, and it's from three barrels that came actually from stock we got from Allied. So it's going to be something very, very different. Up until 1980, we didn't fill barrels for Glenlivet. We only filled barrels for outside orders. So this is going to be a completely new expression as far as Glenlivet's concerned. It's another flash in history. It's going to be a step back in time to a very specific place. And
what's it taste like?
Tastes like what I would always expect with the Glenlivet. I've got that lovely soft tropical fruit note, maybe a little bit more concentrated than you would expect, and with American oak, honey and vanilla coming through. It's classic Glenlivet, but it's only 500 bottles worldwide as well, so it's going to be in demand.
Now, because I know somebody's going to ask me why I didn't ask this question, you said you never filled American oak barrels, essentially, with Glenlivet before, except for customers?
Yeah, it was the style that we were creating at Glenlivet at that time. Bill Smith Grant, who was the captain, was looking to create a certain whiskey, and our markets were looking for a certain whiskey. So at that time, we didn't fill barrels. We filled hogsheads and we filled butts.
And then that changed in 1980.
In 1980, we started to outsource a little bit more. We were taking on more blending contracts as production increased. And at that time, we were filling casks for Allied. Allied wanted barrels filled. We filled barrels for them.
Tell me about Alan's newest baby.
Alan's newest baby is Master Distiller's Reserve. It's just a recent launch. It was brought out in July. Terminal 5 at Heathrow was our initial place, and it's been the fastest selling product launch in the history of Terminal 5.
Tell me about it. What makes it unique?
For Glenlivet, it's containing a much higher sherry matured stock, so it's given it a more robust depth of character. The 12-year-old is classic bourbon matured whiskey, so it's offering just a different flavour profile, again showing the diversity that Glenlivet offers with the careful use of good wood.
And it'll be available worldwide in duty-free now, or still in Europe? Where will it be out?
It's just taking a little time. No, as with all product launches, it's going to take a time to filter down to the markets. But when you consider how prominent the Glenlivet is in the US, I would expect it to see it there before too long.
In regular retail?
Again, in travel retail, okay. Yeah.
What else is coming up that we need to know about? I know you guys have a new website too, right?
The new website should be completed by early December, hopefully. We've just redone the Guardians of Glenlivet website, so we've now got close on 20,000 members around the world. We're incorporating the Glenlivet Society into the Guardians, which is going to make a huge difference to what we're doing. So we're looking at more social media, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter now, so we're just trying to put ourselves out there. We're well aware that there's so many fans of the distillery, we'll never actually get there, so you have to work the other way, you have to stay in contact with them.
Now, you also have the Glenlivet Whiskey School coming up in a week or so at the distillery. That's your baby, because you wind up teaching it, right?
I do. It's 3 days, and we're trying to cover virtually all of the whiskey-making process. We'll include walks into the hills and the old smugglers' trails with one of the local rangers. We'll run the small still. We'll do Warehouse 1 visits into the old Dunnage warehouse. Basically, we just want to open people's eyes to Glenlivet and say, look, hang on, there's more to this big distillery and what you think there is.
And when will you have the dates for next year's schools set up?
We should have them within the next few weeks. We're just doing a review just now of one or two items, but I would say probably early May and early October will be the dates for next year.
Gordon and MacPhail is also making news with a new Benromic release and an update on the Glenlivet Generations 70-year-old released earlier this year. I spent a few minutes getting the details from Michael Urquhart.
Under the Benromic side, we have a new cask strength 2001 distillation. Nice. It's been matured in bourbon, so lovely kind of fruity green apples, vanilla, and a bit of spice. Really, really nice. Here in France, we've done some exclusive bottlings for La Maison de Whisky, Glenburgie 97, Atal Moore 97. It's really quite interesting because you've got lovely kind of apricots coming through, bit of date, lovely, rich and fruity. The Glenburgie 97, again, Fussell sherry cask, really, really sweet, and lots of lingering notes there, really beautiful.
And the Benromic, that's the first cask strength you've released, right?
We've done a cask strength previously. It was an older one back in the 1980s, but what we've decided to do is take out a younger one, which makes it a bit more available to everyone because the price point's a bit lower. But the one thing with Benromic is looking at the kind of caliber, the quality. The new Benromics, we've got the phenol content of 10 to 12, so you get that degree of spice, that smokiness coming through. But that's how Speyside whiskies used to be made if you go back to the 1960s and prior to then.
The last time we talked was back in March in Edinburgh when you were releasing the Glenlivet Generations, the 70-year-old. And at the time, I didn't realize this, but you held some bottles back, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a great time, launching the 70-year-old Glenlivet under the G&M Generations range. Great fun, great place to go and do it, Edinburgh Castle. The whiskey actually came from a butt, so there was quite a lot of whiskey there. So in the first release, we released 100 70 cl/75, and then 175 20 cls. But we kept back in reserve 100, the equivalent of 100 70 cl bottles, and they'll be released in the second part of 2012. The 70 cls, to say of the 100, we've virtually sold or reserved all of those. We still have some 20 cls left, and they are going pretty well as well. So next year we'll have the second release.
Now I have to ask, because next week is the start of the Stockholm Festival, and last year at the Stockholm Festival, you had a tragic accident with one of the Mortlach 70 20 cl bottles. Did that ever turn up, and what are you doing this year to make sure one of the Glenlivets doesn't go marching off into the sunset?
Well, it was our importer symposium who had one of the 20 cls in their stand, and it disappeared overnight from a secure compound, so how secure is secure? This year, I'm not sure if they're going to go and put one on display, but Stockholm is a beer and whiskey festival. It's a great occasion, over 3 nights on 2 weekends, so a lot of people come along to it. I can't remember the numbers, but it's big. So I'm looking forward to going there next weekend to be a 3 weekends in the trot, because after that it's Whiskey Fest San Francisco. But great to get out there and go and tell consumers all about our whiskies, and it's always well received wherever in the world we go.
Finally, back in the U.S., there's been a change at Malt Advocate magazine. John Hansel has announced a name change for the magazine, which will now be known as The Whiskey Advocate. The magazine also got a complete redesign with the fall issue, and John's Whiskey Fests will now be known as the Whiskey Advocate Whiskey Fests, starting with San Francisco on October 7th. More highlights from Paris in a few minutes, but that's the news for now. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Let's check the comments of the week now, brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. We've heard a lot lately about how a little bit of whiskey can be good for your health, but I never thought I'd hear someone say that whiskey cast is good for your health. Got a great email from Tuomo in Finland, who asked that I not use his last name. Here's what he had to say. My dear girlfriend cannot stand whiskey and has listened to less than half an episode of Whiskey Cast, but is a huge Whiskey Cast fan. Sounds strange, but let me explain. When you enjoy life, it appears on the waist, and I really enjoyed it. I found Whiskey Cast about 5 months ago. At home, listening to it is a little difficult, though, so I listened to Whiskey Cast only when I'm jogging. I quickly noticed how great your program is, and it resulted that I started to go jogging as often as possible, which again led to that I have lost 12 kilograms and 15 centimeters from the waist. So my girlfriend is super happy about it, and let's just say that my home points are at an all-time high. So thank you very much. I've learned a ton of new stuff about whiskey. Now it's time to download episodes 285 through 287 and go out. Kindly, Tuomo and Kati. Congratulations, Tuomo, and keep up the good work. Now, when I get an email with the subject line, "It's your fault," it's usually from a close relative. But this email from George LaChance Sr. was different. Dear Mark, right now I'm sitting at the Rackhouse Bar with a nice shot in front of me, and it's all your fault. I was flying from San Francisco to Denver, I'm from Connecticut, and catching up on a missed podcast. I think it was the September 11th episode when you mentioned the shakeup at Stranahan's Distillery. About 30 minutes later, I was sitting with an excellent burger waiting for the next tour. It hasn't started yet, so I'll kill some time with the weed dram. I think these few hours are going to be the best part of the trip. Thanks for the inspiration. Most likely, I'd have just gone to the hotel. Please keep the podcast HD and tasting notes coming. Your productions are truly top shelf. George LaChance Sr. Thank you very much, George, and if you have comments, questions, or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. You can always use the WhiskeyCast Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. The comments of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker on the web at johnnywalker.com, where you can become a whiskey insider today. Let's check out the calendar of events now, brought to you by Laphroaig. As I mentioned earlier, Whiskey Fest San Francisco is coming up on October 7th, along with the Whiskey Show in London that same weekend. I'll have more on that next time around. Glenmorangie's Dr. Bill Lumsden will host a tasting at Keen's Steakhouse in New York City October 4th. The Kensington Wine Market in Calgary, Alberta will host a launch party for the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's new Canadian chapter on October 18th. And in addition to the Bonhams Whiskey Auction in Edinburgh on October 12th, Bonhams will hold one in New York City on October 20th. You'll find a full calendar of events on the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Don't forget about Laphroaig Live coming up on October 6th from Sydney, Australia. You can find all of the details at laphroaig.com.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Barry Crockett, Master Distiller, Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey.
The pot still category is receiving so much attention nowadays. I think what we will see as time progresses is that the single pot still category will indeed resume its rightful place at the very top end of the whiskies of the world. And of course, this is only correct given that Irish whiskey has had world recognition for not just decades, but you could say for centuries. And Redbreast is at the forefront of that.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
More highlights now from Whiskey Live Paris. I referred many times to this as one of the world's best whiskey events, but I'm not the only one who thinks so. I asked Whiskey Magazine contributing editor and malt maniac Dave Broom to put Whiskey Live Paris in perspective.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons. One, I think, is the quality of the people who come. You know, the French consumer is fascinated by high-quality spirits. So people actually wander around rather than just drinking. They come around and actually genuinely want to taste. So there's lots of spittoons and people taking notes. And this is as an element, although people are enjoying themselves, there's an element of seriousness about it. And I think that means, that kind of filters down to the producers as well, who then raise their game by producing perhaps more unusual bottlings and things that aren't normally on show at other whiskey festivals. So it's a remarkable show. And I think over the past couple of years, it has moved in a very sensible direction, which is the same with the magazine, which is to widen the remit. So it's not just whiskey, because, you know, the whiskey geeks will have tried almost everything. But there's a world of spirit out there. And there's great connections between all these different spirits. So last year, and I think even better this year, what is happening is that you're seeing not just whiskies, but rums, pisco, tequila, gin, fantastic cognacs, an incredible selection of vintage Calvados as well. And it puts whisky in a very interesting context, because rather than whisky kind of sitting there apart from everything, whisky is now part, pardon me, whisky is now part of this larger family of spirits, wood-aged or non-wood-aged. And it's great to find commonalities between them and also differences between them as well. It's a fascinating show.
And it really reflects the fact that France is the biggest single malt export market for Scotland, outside of the U.S. But in terms of volume and value, they're both neck and neck, and the French actually consume a lot more by volume than the Americans do, despite the fact that America is probably three times bigger.
Yeah, well, you know, the French love whiskey, and the French have loved whiskey for a long time. And the interesting thing about France is, you know, they've always drunk a lot of whiskey, but a lot of it has been kind of low-end, quite cheap blends. But certainly over the past few years, what we're seeing is much more of a move into single malt, into premium whiskies, etc., etc. And, you know, to all the U.S. listeners, you know, the U.S. is a great market, an important market for Scotch whiskey, but really, Scotch whiskey really underperforms in the U.S., given the size, given the population. Scotch has actually got a long, long way to go to actually, you know, punch its weight in the States. So, you know, some lessons maybe could be learned from France.
Spoken like a true Scotsman, praising the French.
Indeed, you know, I mean, we've just lost at rugby today, you know, so, but the French lost yesterday, so we're kind of linked in commiseration with each other. You know, the old alliance is alive and well.
Dave mentioned the wide variety of spirits that are on display here. In fact, there's an entire floor at the Salon de Rothschild with nothing but unusual rums, tequilas, cognacs, and other spirits. And the theme this year of duality has an even more appropriate touch. The Friday night reception was organized by Paris's first women's whiskey group. Dana Paulin is the group's president.
Well, the Women's Spirit Society is something that started a year ago, right before Whiskey Live. And basically, we wanted to create a group and a community for women who are passionate about spirits. We have members from all different nationalities, all different backgrounds. Some people are in the profession, some people don't really know that much about spirits, but they're very passionate about it. And we wanted to create a space that was welcoming, because there's a lot of people that are very curious about spirits, but perhaps a bit hesitant. And so we've had four or five events over throughout the year, and something that we're looking to continue on with.
Tell me what happens at most of these events. I assume they're primarily tastings, tutored tastings, things like that?
Well, for up until now, we've done these events at our boutique at Odeon. That's really the headquarters for the Women's Spirits. And what we try to do is really have an educational approach. So each time we've had a specialist in the field come, most of the time it's been a woman specialist, but we've also had John Glazer from Compass Box, who is our first male guest, and basically includes a tasting, a bit of education, conversation, discussion, and we also try to put a bit of mixed into it as well.
What's the ultimate goal?
To allow women to learn more about spirits and to open up the world of whiskey and fine spirits to women and to start a dialogue.
And I know that in the past this has always been, or spirits has always been sort of male dominated. Is it that women generally don't feel welcome discussing spirits among guys, or is that basically the case?
You know, it's something that we've seen. We have a club at the Maison de Whiskey that has been going for years now, and it has been fairly male-dominated. There are women that are welcome, but I think that they're slightly intimidated. You know, we've had people come into our boutique, and they're talking about the whiskey that they're buying for their husband, but it's obvious that they're buying it for themselves. And so that's part of it, is just to take away that intimidating edge from from whiskey and spirits, and that's something that we're looking to open up.
How do women approach spirits differently from men when you're looking at selecting spirits and doing a tasting? Do women approach it differently from guys?
Well, a part of the women's spirits also is we wanted to break the stereotype of women enjoy sweet pink drinks. And so what we did was, the very first event, we did a tasting that was Beauty and the Beast, and it was Ardbeg and Glenmorangie. And the idea was to show two different sides of whiskey. And at the end of the evening, each lady was offered a rose, and there was a white rose with green borders for Ardbeg and an orange rose for Glenmorangie. And we asked the ladies to choose the whiskey that they preferred by the flower. And we, you know, you might think that Glenmorangie would be the pick, but it really was straight down the middle. And so that really taught us that women don't have a particular taste profile. And that's something that we're looking to do, is just really explore what is it that women enjoy and to break those stereotypes.
The importance of this event to whiskey producers is evident by the number of distillery managers that make the trip here. In addition to Kilhoman's John McClellan, Bal Blair assistant manager Graham Bowie came from Edderton, Alan McConaughey of Glendronach and Benriach was on hand, along with Alastair MacDonald of Auchentoshan. First of all, tell me about Valinche, because we don't get very many cask strength expressions from Auchy, do we?
No, we don't. It's this is a new release this year, and it's an excellent expression of a younger whiskey, but with all of the Auchentoshan character, and a right zesty finish to it, and it's really going down well with the younger drinkers of the Auchentoshan range at the moment. Yeah.
Now, what makes this different from the regular Auchentoshan Classic, other than just the strength? From what I understood, it basically is the same whiskey as the Classic, just not diluted down to 43%, right?
It's very similar. As you say, it's not diluted down, it's cask strength. It's a limited batch, and it's been chosen by our chief blenders, and it's been selected, and it's a lot better than the Classic.
You also have a new one here. I'm assuming this is for the French market, a Bordeaux cask matured one, because I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Yes, it's for the French market. It's for all markets, actually. It's pretty unique. It's 11-year-old Auchentoshan. It's been fully matured in a Bordeaux wine cask. And it just gives a different flavour to the Auchentoshan, you know, to the typical Auchentoshan. Although the Auchentoshan flavours are still there, it adds a bit of spiciness, a bit of oakiness to the finish on the Auchentoshan. It's really unique.
And you said it's available outside of France as well?
It is, yes. It's available at the moment in the UK as well. It's on sale at the moment. It's selling very well, yeah.
Last time around, we heard from Mark Littler of Australia's Hellier's Road, but the godfather of Australian whiskey, Bill Lark, also made the trip.
So how you doing? I know you're back in the saddle now running things since your daughter decided to have a baby and run off with her husband to parts unknown, right?
Yeah, that was very unfair of her. No, we're very, very happy. She's got a beautiful little son. So he potentially a little distiller, I hope. But no, we're going really well, and it's good to be back here at Whiskey Life. Yeah.
What are you working on as far as new whiskies these days? Because I know you're just now getting into the U.S. with some whiskies too, right?
We are. They're loving our whiskies over there. That's going really well. We're getting into a few little specialty releases and for the U.S. and for other markets too, where we're doing things like we've started making rum a few years back, and we're taking the rum out of the barrels that we made, and we're just finishing off some of our whiskies in a rum barrel that we make. So we figure we must be about the only distillery in the world to actually have a rum-finished whiskey finished in a barrel of rum that we made that had our whiskey in it before the rum.
That was made south of the equator.
South of the equator. So we buy some blackstrap molasses from Queensland, and we double distill that. And because we're a small distillery, we're very tight, and we can be on the heart and producing a big gutsy rum. So keep your eye out for that. That'll be coming out shortly. But so we're doing a few little interesting releases like that with our whiskey.
You having fun now that you're back in the saddle again?
I've never worked harder in my life. But it's good. Yeah, and it's great. And it's really good to come to a show like this, Whiskey Live in Paris. I mean, they do such a great job here. This is fantastic.
And it's good to see your whiskeys getting such a reception so far away from home, right?
That is just a wonderful feeling, to see the look on people's faces when they discover Tasmanian whiskey, Lark whiskey, for the first time, and they love it. It's a really nice feeling. Yeah, no, very rewarding.
What's your next project?
go fishing. we're about to build a new bond store on our distillery site when I go home. And one of the things I want to do very soon is do our own little tiny floor malting. We've got barley growing all around our distillery. I want to actually get some of that barley and go from paddock to bottle with our own floor malting. We might only produce 3 or 4 barrels a year that we've malted ourselves, but that's the next thing I want to do.
Joining me now is Lisa Collins of McMira, and not only do you have a couple of new releases, but you actually have a second distillery, or an all-new distillery, that's about to come online in a couple of months, right?
Yes, that's true. The 18th of December, our intention is to distill the first drops of Swedish whiskey from the new distillery. And the distillery is 35 meters high, so it's an unusual building built on the principle of gravity.
And how will this work? Because I know we've had other distilleries that have tried to do things in a scientific way before, but not using the laws of gravity.
Well, for us it's important to have a long-lasting platform, and we have very skilled people who worked with planning for 2 years to do the whiskey distillery in the proportions that we need to keep on producing the same high quality. And you're most welcome to come up and taste the outcome in a few months.
Now, you also have a couple of new releases coming out, including the latest version of the McMira Special, right?
Yes, it's the next release will be in November, and we do have it present here today. And it's special number 7, and we call it Hope. And it is partly stored on cloudberry cask. And we also have a small amount of the whiskey that is peated. And as you perhaps know, our peated version is spiced with a few twigs of juniper as well. So it's a very interesting taste.
That's where a lot of that herbal flavor comes out of that I've tried in your whiskeys before. Where will that be available? Because I know you're now selling in the U.S. Will it be available in export markets as well as Europe?
Yes, I'm not sure about when it will be able to reach it in the US, but you will find it in UK, you will find it here in France, and even in some places in the Nordic region, and of course in the travel and retail section around the Nordic region.
Anything else I need to know about?
No, I'm not sure what that should be, but the Happy Hunting we have here today as well, that is stored on the lingonberry cask, lingonberry wine cask, and this is something that we try to do all the time, put effort in finding a taste to give it a really our whiskey a really Swedish personality.
And I'm with my good friend Jean Donnet of Glenarmore Distillery, one of the few French whiskey distilleries up on the coast of Brittany near the English Channel. And you've got a new Cornog out, and as we've discussed before, Cornog is your peated whiskey, right?
Yes. So, hello, Mark. Yes, Cornog is a peated expression of the distillery. And this is the latest bottling, which was released about a month ago. And it's interesting because when I started distilling, I prefer to play it a bit safe, so being, I would say, a bit conservative for the cut. And once I thought I would have a little stock which would make me a bit more comfortable, I started to be a bit more ambitious. Not too much, but a bit more ambitious with the cut. And this corner has actually a lower cut. And I'm happy because it seems to work. And this one is very much in the same style as before, but I think it's just more character, and this is the way the future Connocks will be, and so that's it.
And how's business going otherwise? Are you getting into more stores and getting more distribution?
Business is going fine, and I'm actually, if we think of United States, having our whiskey sold to the U.S. is something very important to us for several reasons. And I can say we have already an importer in U.S. It's a bit too early to say the name. We almost decided to start releasing our whiskey in the U.S. this autumn. But it's still a bit too early because we need to make a 75 centiliters version of our bottle, which is an investment, and so it's something important, and we felt we were not totally ready. So we agreed with this importer we would slightly delay this, and I hope maybe in a year and a half, something like that, we'll probably have our whiskey sold in the US, and we are very, very happy about this.
By the end of next year, theoretically?
Maybe. I hope so. As soon as we are ready, because it's important. We don't want to rush it. We'll do it when we are ready, because we need the 75 bottles. We need to be sure we can have not big volumes, because we are a small distillery, we're on a niche market, but still enough to satisfy the needs and not have a false start. But we are very, very pleased with this.
I wish you luck. I can't wait to see your whiskeys in the U.S. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you, Mark.
Each year, Fred and Stuart Lang of Douglas Lang & Company take turns making the trip to Paris. This year, it was Fred's turn.
We're working on a director's cut just now, and it'll probably be a Europe-only release initially, and it's going to be positioned essentially between Old Malt Cask and our Old and Rare. Something we fell on unconsciously when we brought out our anniversary bottlings a couple of years back. There are some interesting malts that we could put out, not quite as good as we want to have in our Old and Rare, which is for us the absolute stamp of approval, but maybe a shade too good and a little bit different to put into the OMC. So a director's cut should be released probably in Europe through the course of late October, early November, and you catch me on the hop, as you always do, Mark. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We're going to release, quite unusually, some single casks under the provenance label of quarter bottles, 20 centiliter bottles. We believe market's turning a little bit. Obviously, people are becoming a little bit more price conscious. I think we will be the first to put out single cask, complete single cask bottlings in 20 centiliter bottles. We do the advanced samples in 20 centiliters, but we'll only release 10, 20 cases before it runs out into the 70 centiliter. So we're hoping something like that will be attractive in the European capacity. And of course, we've got Really Big Pete comes out now. Really Big Pete's just been released in a 4.5 liter bottle.
But it's the same whiskey as Big Pete, right?
Absolutely. Same whiskey as Big Pete. Kind of similar to our Christmas release. Big Pete at Christmas is dressed up as a very false Santa Claus. He's being released onto an unsuspecting Christmas community at cask strength, about 58.4 vol percent. And he's dressed up in a Christmas outfit. And the 1,800 cases that we have bottled, bigger batch than normal for Big Pete, because we thought Christmas would be a big thing for him. We've got 58 cases left in stock at today's date, and I'm reckoning within the next 10 days, 2 weeks, that will now be out. So, very nice. Well, exciting business for us just now, Mark.
Do you think, what will the price point be for those 20 CL bottles, do you think? And will that make it easier for people to afford them?
Certainly in the run-up to Christmas, I think it's going to be attractive, if for no other reason, a stocking filler. But the whole raison d'etre was to get it out into the marketplace at the equivalent of just under £10 a bottle. So, single cask at 46, under £10 a bottle, from four regions. We're hoping, and don't ask me, please, the malts that we're releasing, because I cannot remember at this precise stage. You always catch me on the hop. But there's a Mortlach, there's a very nice Bunahavan 9-year-old sherry cask, which is just outstanding. We've got some nice ones that we think will attract a community. Time will tell.
And it wouldn't be Whiskey Live Paris without a chat with Robert Hicks of Laphroaig.
First of all, tell me about Triplewood, because this is something I know that you and John have been working on for quite a while.
Yeah, well, we were asked to produce a special for Duty Free. We don't like doing specials as such, and we thought we need to do something for them because they pressurized us. We started off by taking quarter cask whiskey, and instead of putting it into a bottling, we actually put it into sherry, Oloroso sherry casks, and let it mature on. Now, depending, we're looking for a flavor, so it doesn't lie for a specific length of time. It lies like quarter cask until the flavor's right, and it does. It was sold only in duty-free around the world. but so many friends of Lafroy got it that we were inundated with the request, why can't we buy it? Now, I'll leave it up to you. We've taken 2 years to actually get the triple wood ready for general release, and this is the release in France we're at today. It is. So it's now available throughout the world, not just in duty-free.
And you are getting ready for a long trip to make an even another debut for triple wood, right? You're going all the way down to Australia for Lafroy Live.
Yeah, we decided we've had it from the UK, we've had it from Spain, we had it from Kentucky, and it's time we went out to our Aussie friends and did it from there. So we're flying out. I fly back from Paris on Monday evening. I have Tuesday at home, and I fly out on Wednesday morning to the Far East, and I go via Singapore down to Australia to do the Lafroy Live there, and we're going to launch Triple Wood down there as well. It's something I think everyone who's tried it at Duty Free, when they bought it through Duty Free, just really loved it. So we're trying to get it out around the world so that friends of Lafroy can actually buy it without having to fly.
And what will people be seeing on the Lafroy Live webcast October 6th?
Well, apart from John and myself, we do have a descendant of one of the original brothers. But as far as whiskey is concerned, I think we're doing Quartercast, we're doing Triple Wood. I think we have a special Cartius. And I'm trying to remember what the fourth one. There is another one.
And I understand there's some Australian barbecue involved.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I know Aussies talk about the barbie and the shrimps and what have you, but I hope the shrimps are more prawns than just shrimps. I like the big prawns with my Lafroy.
And from what I've heard, there's going to be ribs too.
Yeah, well, I've got to be careful with ribs. I'm a diabetic, so I can drink Lafroy with no problems, but the barbecue sauce and ribs, that causes me a problem.
Those are just some of the folks I talked with this weekend, and I'll have much more for you in the weeks to come here on WhiskeyCast. Again, I want to thank my hosts at La Maison du Whisky for making this special coverage of Whiskey Live possible. Now, I have to admit that I picked up a nasty cold over the last 24 hours or so here in Paris, so my nose is shot for a few days. That means there won't be a What I'm Tasting Today segment this time around. However, I collected plenty of samples to take home for nosing, and I'll be posting my tasting notes on the WhiskeyCast website and the free apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple edition is brought to you by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is brought to you by Benromic. You'll find the calendar of events, links for our Facebook page and my Twitter feed, WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings, the print shop and photo gallery, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. Support for WhiskeyCast comes from Redbreast, the definitive pure pot still Irish whiskey. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you this time around from Whiskey Live Paris. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.